This program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tom Verducci is coming up next segment. Jared Bednar, Colorado Avalanche head coach, coming up right after that. So you better get in right now. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. I mentioned that the trade deadline is upon us in the NFL. Aqib Talib sent by the Rams to the Dolphins. They're trying to clear out some cap space, get some free space to sign Jalen Ramsey. I mentioned earlier that Andy Dalton got benched by the Bengals. My man Will Brinson, fellow CBSer, tweets, Bengals benched Andy Dalton on his birthday. Ouch. That is cold-blooded. Like, I'll tell you why that's cold-blooded. Not only that they benched him on his birthday, but he should have been benched sooner. It's almost like they were waiting to do him on his birthday. Christmas Day didn't want any of that. I mean, they're probably back there like, what do we do? This guy does not give us our best chance to win. We got to see what we have with Finley. What do we do with Andy, man? Like, Andy's a good guy and all. Not a very good quarterback, but he's a good guy and all. And he's done his best for us. You know, it's a tough conversation to have. We have to bench this guy. When should we bench him? Oh, the hell with that. You bench him on his birthday. That's when you bench him. Before or after we wheel out the cake and light the candles. Oh, no, wheel the cake out. Light the candles. Let him think it's all good. And then right when he starts to have that first bite, then you hit him with it. Hey, Andy, really quickly. Before you go with that ice cream cake, you're benched, brah. You're done. That's brutal. You know what they should do? They should wheel out a gigantic cake. Yeah, because Dalton, he's no dummy. The Red Rifle is probably like, man, you know what? We're not good. They probably have to get a look at somebody else. I don't know, man. I must not be in really good standing with this team. But then they deke him. They wheel out a big cake. And it's not like a cake that somebody went to Albertsons and bought it last second. They baked a big-ass cake. And they wheel it out there so Dalton starts to think, you know what? I'm good. I'm fine, man. They would not be baking me or buying me a big cake if I wasn't in a good spot. Yeah, happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear BB gun. Happy birthday to you. Thank you, everybody. And then out jumps Ryan Finley from the cake. Surprise! Oh, that's why that was a giant cake. Because you put Finley in it. Surprise! The job is mine. Give me the rock. That's why the cake was 6'3". They benched this guy on his birthday. Cold, man. Really cold. That is cold-blooded. So we are watching that carefully. Adam Gase may have lost the Jets already. There's been some reaction on that, too. Rome, what a loser Gase is, losing his locker room in only 7 weeks. Signed Alvey's backup, the ponytail guy whose cologne had his jungle career over after a few days. Dave in the San Fernando Valley. Hey, Dave, if you're going to tell that story, tell the story correctly. Ponytail guy had cologne, but it was a masking agent for his cigarette smoke smell. That was kind of an awkward thing. Which, by the way, only made the cigarette smell worse. The collision of nicotine and smoke with cheap cologne was really bad. It didn't make it better. But worst of all, and homeboy tried hard. I mean, he really did. He just smoked cigarettes, which was not good. Because then he tried to cover that up with bad cologne, which made it worse. And we were 16 floors up, so homeboy had to go 16 floors down to get his fix. But best of all was me going to Lyle. Because Kyle Brandt was always like, dude, I don't know how much more of this I can take. don't know how much more of this I can take. Didn't bother me so much because I was on the other side of the glass. So Kyle would say, dude, seriously, man, this is really pissing me off. I don't know how much more of this I can take. I'm like, bro, what do you want me to do? Tell the guy to stop splashing cologne to cover up his cigarette smell? Yeah, man. Yeah, Van Smack, that's what I want you to do. I got a better idea, Lyle. It's not bothering me at all. Now, I know I got to lead from the front, but since you're the guy with the issue, you tell him. You tell him. All right, I think I will. I think I will. So Kyle Brandt was great like that. KB was a tremendous guy to have in that regard because he could have that hard conversation, and he went over and he told homeboy, hey, bro, we got a problem, man, with your cologne and your cigarette smoke. They don't match. They don't mix. Kev, you got to quit one or the other, preferably both. Your addiction to Dracar and Marlboro Reds or whatever you're smoking is really hurting us. They don't mix. Anyway, if you're going to tell that story, Dave in San Fernando Valley, man, tell it the right way. At least get the story right. 1-800-636-8686. You know what would be really interesting? The Bears making a move for the Red Rifle right now. You're going to tell me that Andy Dalton is not better than Mitch Trubisky? You're going to tell me that Dalton doesn't give them a better chance to win than Trubisky? The hell he doesn't. I would. There's talk about a possible C.J. Beathard deal. You could get Dalton. He got benched on his birthday at the deadline. He could be had. If I'm the Bears, I make that deal. They bench this guy on his birthday. After everything he's done for them? All right, he's done nothing for them. But he's been a pro. He has soldiered on. He deserves better. All right, so you got World Series Game 6. Let me get ahead of Tom Verducci because I've got nothing to add that he won't have already. He's Tom Verducci. So you got a huge game tonight for both teams, but especially Houston and especially Justin Verlander. Like, Justin Verlander is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Amazing player. Not a lot of dudes get a chance, though, to work the bump and wrap up a championship at the age of 36. He's already got one. But given the narrative surrounding how he's pitching the World Series, this is a really important game for him. Really important game for him. So a huge night for him. Huge night for the Astros. Huge night for everybody there. And obviously the biggest night in the history of the Nats franchise. Because if they can somehow stop the bleeding and get this thing to an all-hands-on-deck Game 7, then anything can happen, because generally it does. But you can't get to a Game 7 without pulling the upset and winning a Game 6. A Game 6 that Vegas expects Houston to take. But tonight's game is not just about the dudes between the chalk. It's also very much about the fans behind the dish, because those premium seats have become a hotbed for content and controversy throughout the entire postseason. In this postseason alone, we have seen Russ in the beard nearly die of apathy and boredom during an extremely dramatic elimination game in the ALCS. We've also seen some dude at Yankee Stadium stand up, pull up his sweater, and reveal a Joe Buck sucks tee. Right in the front row for the entire world to see, and a tip of the hat to Joe Buck, who rolled with it and made light of it, because he knows. Joe Buck, to me, is like one of those examples of people like Twitter unilaterally, or somebody unilaterally decides, that guy. I hate that guy. I hate that guy. And then because so many others have nothing better to do, they just rush in to hate that guy too, without really having a reason to hate that guy other than they've got nothing to do. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to feel about Joe Buck. I can just tell you Joe Buck is a really professional play-by-play guy who can do a number of sports. But no matter what he does going forward, no matter what kind of work he does, and I think he does exceptional work, honestly, people will hate him and show up in the front row with shirts that say, Joe Buck sucks. So better off to roll with it, and he does. And then two nights ago in the district, three Instagram models from the online publication ShagMag also lifted up their clothing, but not to show a Joe Buck sucks tee, but rather to show no message at all. In fact, not only was there no message, there was nothing at all. they just lifted up their shirts to lift up their shirts to completely expose their breasts on broadcast, rabbit ear, network television, over the air, network, rabbit ear television. So in a time when everybody's got a podcast, everybody's got a blog, everybody has a brand, it takes a whole lot to get noticed. These three gals from the previously unknown Shag Mag flashed millions of viewers at home, and that got them noticed. And if the surprise nudity did not do the trick, the ensuing lifetime ban from baseball sure as hell did.
For life.
Move over, my man. Peter Edward Rose, you've got yourself some company. The three ladies in question told TMZ yesterday that their goal was to raise awareness for breast cancer during Breast Cancer Awareness Month and to promote their brand. They also pointed out there's a very obvious double standard. Men can expose their bare chests with no consequence at all.
It just is a total double standard, and that's part of our mission statement. You know, we're a men's magazine. We love men's entertainment. We love sex articles, sex tips, all that. And at the same time, we love pushing the boundaries and being like, yo, this is a double standard, and how can we, in a playful way, because we think it's playful, kind of change this.
Yo, like there's a double standard. In a playful way. Playful, pornographic, whatever. There's no doubt. I mean, I guess if you look at it on the surface, I guess what they're saying could be accurate. I guess there is a double standard. We can take off our shirts at a baseball game. Nothing happens. They do it. They get banned for life. I guess.
For life.
You're like, I don't know. Maybe the solution here is just to make sure that nobody takes off their shirt inside a stadium. I mean, can't we all agree that the world would be a better place if the likes of, well, if women kept their shirts on and Keith Arnold kept his on too, so he's not allowed to flash his pepperoni nips all over the joint?
I don't even have big nipples. Like, let's be real.
Yo, Batman. Batman! What's good? What's good, Batman? What's good, Keith? What's good, pepperoni nips? Hey, Batman, I got pepperoni for you.
What's good, fat boy?
Anyway, there is now a lifetime banishment from baseball. I mean, good luck enforcing that. I'm pretty sure these three ladies are going to have very little problem getting into another ballpark. What are you going to do? Put up nude pictures of them at every turnstile across the country? And even then, really, do you really want to spend the next 50 years enforcing that? You're going to tell me these three, when they're 90, are still not going to be let in to do what they want to do at a baseball game? You're going to go all Frank the Tank with them?
We're going streaking! Yeah!
So I guess in a way what's really amazing about this is you've got Game 5, and the most memorable thing from Game 5 were four different chests. The three bare ones behind home plate and the fully clothed one in center field that took a direct Yordan Alvarez dinger while double fisting a couple of tall boys.
2-1. That is hit into left center field. Back at the wall. It is gone. Yordan Alvarez back in the lineup for the Astros, and he goes deep. The opposite way to make it 2-0 Houston in the second.
I think he had a beer in each hand and he just let it hit him right in the chest or the gut.
Not one drop spilled. I mean, that's next level.
That was next level. So tonight, while Verlander looks to cement his World Series legacy, the Nats look to survive and force a Game 7. You can fully expect the camera crew from Fox to be on high alert for any potential copycat flashers. No shoes, no shirt, no baseball. No shoes, no shirt, no baseball. Tom Verducci's coming up next. Hiring can be very challenging. As Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner discovered, Gretch needed to hire a game artist for her education tech company and knew it would not be easy to find somebody for that team. This is why she went to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Gretchen posted her job on ZipRecruiter and was impressed with how quickly she found qualified candidates. She also used ZipRecruiter screening questions so she could focus on the very best applicants. That's how Gretchen found a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. With results like that, it is no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter can get a quality candidate within the very first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. 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 ZipRecruiter. It is, in fact, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. All right, absolutely huge night. Game 6 in Houston, so I'm fired up for this. We are joined by somebody who works with Fox Sports, MLB Network. He is a 3-time National Sports Writer of the Year, first person to ever win an Emmy Award, is both a studio analyst and a reporter. He is a New York Times best-selling author. Tom Verducci is going to be part of Fox's World Series broadcast of Game 6 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, plus MLB Network's MLB Tonight, which is airing live before and after the game. He joins us once again. Tom, it is great to have you back. Thanks so much for doing it. How are you?
I am great. It's always cool when you get a chance to go to the ballpark, and the World Series championship will be on the line.
That is the best. All right, so before we get into tonight's game, if you were to go back Friday, to Friday, Tom, before Game 3, the Astros were on the road. They were down 2-0. They were not looking anything like themselves in the first two games. In fact, what did you make of how they showed up in those first two games?
Surprise. I knew the Nationals came in, obviously, red hot. I thought maybe the off days would have affected the Nationals more than it did. But Houston really surprised me how they were off their game in the first couple of games, especially Cole and Verlander losing back-to-back for the first time all year. But even that, the quality of their bats weren't great. Remember, this is a team that led the major leagues in the fewest strikeouts and the most walks. That had never been done before. It's an incredible combination. And it wasn't until Game 3 that that team showed up.
All right, so then in Game 3, a game where the Astros used 6 pitchers and they allowed just 1 run, as you wrote, A.J. Hinch lined up the game so that Washington's 1-4 hitters saw only Zach Greinke and only his 2 best relievers. How significant then was A.J. Hinch in that game?
Yeah, I mean, huge. Listen, he went with Greinke and got him out there in that, I thought, pivotal inning there. He brought in Josh James to pitch to Ryan Zimmerman, 2 guys on base. Nationals Park was going nuts. He was able to navigate his way through that. I think he saw that Greinke just actually throughout the postseason hasn't been the same Greinke in terms of command. But then, yeah, he pushes Will Harris, who I think has been his best reliever, even better than Roberto Osuna, the closer, into a game early because that's when the middle of the order was coming up, right? That's what I'm talking about with the way he managed these games. And I think he's been much more pedal to the metal than Davey Martinez, who's kind of saving his games for spots that never come around and games get away. And clearly Hinch has made it a priority here that any kind of a situation, and it doesn't have to be the eighth inning, if it's Rendon and Soto coming up, he wants Will Harris on them. If it's the ninth inning, obviously it's Osuna. And that plan has worked out perfectly so far.
Tom Verducci is joining us before Game 6. All right, then what about Game 4? Jose Urquidy, who never pitched above Class A before this year, turns in 5 great innings. Meanwhile, as you wrote, the Astros approached Patrick Corbin like it was an American Legion game. How much do the Astros hitters know about Corbin before that game, or how much did they know?
You know, not a whole lot. I talked to Jose Altuve about that. Last time he saw him was 2017. Corbin obviously is one of the best sliders in the game. He wants to get you out by chasing that slider out of the zone, and it's all set up with a fastball to get to a 2-strike count. And I just got a kick out of earlier that as Corbin was warming up before the first inning, Springer's out there. Yeah, he's the leadoff batter. He should be out there. But Altuve and Bregman are out there. Not just in front of the dugout, they're on the grass close to the circle of home plate, and you can see them just timing the pitches of Patrick Corbin. And they get in the box, and both of those guys got first pitch fastballs, and both of those guys squared it up for base hits. And that's when they went 4 singles in a row, took the lead. Essentially, as Altuve told me, that was pretty much the game there with a lead. So, listen, this team is so smart besides being talented. I think when you look at hitters like Altuve and Bregman especially, they're just so smart, and they understand what pitchers are trying to do to them. They're a great breaking ball hitting team. They are the best breaking ball hitting team in all of baseball. And that has proven in the course of this series. Yeah, they're good, but they're super smart hitters.
We are talking to Tom Verducci. So, Tom, things were going so well for the Nationals. They come back home. They lose three in a row. I mean, pretty disastrous. I don't think anybody needs a reminder of how tough this Nationals team is from a mental and psychological standpoint, right? We saw what they overcame this year. We saw how far they've come. But how rough a weekend was that for them? And how do you think they do show up tonight?
Yeah, that's a great point because, listen, you're talking about a city there, the district, that hadn't seen a World Series game in, what, 86 years or whatever it was. And it finally comes to Washington. Not only did they not win a game, they never had a lead in the series at home, those three games. It was just crazy that they didn't have a reason to get involved in these games, and the Astros would jump out early with home runs or, in one case, the four singles. It took the crowd out of the game. It's like, you know, you showed up at a party and they said, well, tonight we're just going to go with ginger ale. The hard stuff is not going to be here. It's like, okay, we'll do the best that we can. And I really felt bad for the city of Washington that the games weren't more competitive, at least going back and forth a little bit. But, yeah, you mentioned their toughness, Jim. That's not in question. This team has played three games so far in the postseason where it's win or go home. And guess what? They've won them all. They won the wild card game with a comeback late in the game. They won two games against the Dodgers, games four and game five, backs against the wall. They've got Steven Strasburg on the mound. They haven't lost a game with him on the mound in the postseason. I think the Nationals are looking at this like they're not in a terrible situation here in game six because of Strasburg and because, yeah, they've won these elimination games before three times.
And then you get it to game seven where anything can happen. And why wouldn't you like your chances with Strasburg, except for the fact that he's got to go up against Justin Verlander, Tom Verducci, my guest, for a few more moments. Tom, like Verlander, he's done absolutely everything there is to do as a pitcher, which, except for win a World Series game, which is really kind of strange and bizarre. Knowing this guy as the ultimate competitor, this lack of a World Series win is not for a lack of trying. And as you point out, he is not looking to join Kevin Brown and Schoolboy Rowe as the only guys to lose three potential postseason clinchers. What do you think it would mean to him to get the win tonight that wins the World Series for Houston?
Yeah, this means a lot to him. Justin, as you mentioned, ultimate competitor. He knows baseball history. Like, he knows where he is on the strikeout list and win list and what's ahead of him down the road milestone-wise. It's part of what drives him. Yes, winning drives him. But he's one of these guys. He does have a sense of baseball history. And he knows there's a big fat zero in the one-loss column in the World Series in his record. Now, he hasn't pitched badly in the World Series, Jim. Six games there, while he's been in the game, his teams have scored a total of seven runs, right? They've never scored more than two runs while he's been on the mound in those five, six World Series games. So it's not like he's been terrible, but again, he knows what the history of this thing is, and especially now getting the ball, you know, to try to close out the World Series. That means even more to him. I think the whole key for him, Jim, is going to be whether he has a slider or not. And, you know, that slider to me, one of the best sliders in the game. It was during the regular season. Batters hit .119 off a slider. That's ridiculous. Postseason, it's gone missing a little bit. They're hitting about .235, which is really high. He changed his grip the last start. I thought it was a little bit better. You know, the Nationals have been beaten in this series because the Houston Astros have really increased the amount of breaking ball pitches they've thrown. You know, the Nationals went 0-14 against Gerrit Cole against breaking pitches in Game 5. You know, we all know about the fastball. That was his best breaking ball game of his career, 0-14, Gerrit Cole. So Verlander's got to go out there. He needs to beat them, at least put them away. You can get ahead with fastballs, but you need to put the Nationals away with breaking balls. He's got a good curveball, but to me that slider is going to be the key. If you see him get some outs early in the game with the slider, that, to me, would be good news for the Houston Astros.
Tom Verducci is my guest. That's an amazing stat you had about Gerrit Cole. I think it speaks to exactly how good this guy is and his ability to adjust. So if it comes down to, or to a large extent, whether or not Verlander's got that slider tonight, Tom, what's your gut tell you? Before I ask you about what could happen in a Game 7, do you think there's going to be a Game 7?
I do think there's going to be a Game 7 because I've just seen a lot of Steven Strasburg this postseason. And nothing's bothering this guy. I think the quality of his stuff is amazing. I think he's such a difficult task for those Houston hitters to solve because he's got four pitches that he throws, and he throws them almost exactly an equal amount of time. And if you watched him pitch in that, what was it, game two, and he pitched against the Astros, he got the six full counts, and five of those were breaking balls or changeups. So he's not afraid to throw any pitch at any time. And I think right now, if you ask me to break down these two pitchers going tonight on pure stuff, it's Edge Washington. And we know so far in this World Series, home field advantage has meant absolutely nothing. Home field hasn't, you know, home team hasn't won a game yet. So to me, I think the Nationals can find a way behind Strasburg to win this game. They have to go Strasburg straight to Doolittle and Hudson. Maybe there's an at-bat there for Patrick Corbin to get at Alvarez. But you're going to be a very short bullpen in terms of who Davey Martinez trusts in this game.
Tom, so as a quick follow, if in fact it goes that way, what can Martinez expect, if anything, from Max Scherzer in Game 7? What's your sense?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question. My sense is not much. You know, if Max is physically able to get on the mound, I mean, he couldn't even lift his arm the other day. So that wasn't even a question of whether he could or couldn't pitch. I just think this thing is a little more serious than a lot of people think. It's not like waking up with, you know, a stiff neck and you get some heat treatment, you get a cortisone shot and you're good to go. There's a nerve problem in there with Max on the trapezoid neck area. And listen, they're going to say, they'll find out today how much better it's improved with the cortisone shot. Listen, again, if he can lift his arm, he's going to try to pitch. What they can get out of him, I don't know. But as you know, Jim, you get to a game seven, man, it's anything can happen. It's all hands on deck. All the rules of engagement of how you play a baseball game go out the window. It's do anything to win one baseball game. So I couldn't even tell you if anybody would have an advantage in that game with or without Max Scherzer.
Right. And, Tom, you know that guy as well as anybody, that if there's any way for him to get out there, whether it's cortisone, adrenaline, whatever it is, he's going to find a way to get out there. But to that point, all hands on deck. Anything could happen, but they've got to get it there first. Tom Verducci is going to be part of Fox's World Series broadcast of Game 6 tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. Also, MLB Network's MLB Tonight, which is going to air live before and after the game. Given what you're doing today, Tom, I appreciate you making time for us once again. So good to have you back. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
Great job, Tom. Thank you. Really well done. What a great conversation. Right before Game 6. All right, as he points out, the home team has not won yet. And in terms of pure stuff, he says he would take Strasburg over Justin Verlander, but watch for Verlander's slider. If he's using it effectively early on and getting guys out, that's going to be to his advantage. All right, when we come back, let's talk some hockey. Colorado Avalanche hockey. Jared Bednar is my guest. When we return, and in the meantime, you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Time for a sports update. Here you go. We are going to talk some Colorado Avalanche hockey momentarily. We are efforting the head coach there. And that's Jared Bednar. He's got a really interesting background as well, so we will have that for you momentarily. Meantime, Game 6 of the World Series tonight. Who you got? It's Justin Verlander finally going to get that win. That's just one of those weird deals that a pitcher who's not only that good and that dominant, one of the best ever, but a pitcher who's been that good and that dominant in the postseason, in the DS, in the ALCS, he's been great in the postseason. It's not like he can't pitch in the postseason. He's had a lot of success in the divisional series and the championship series, league championship series, but not the World Series. But to Tom Verducci's point, in those six losses, his team has scored seven runs. So that's a big part of it. But you know, as proud as he is, as competitive as he wants to be the guy not only to snap that personal streak, but to win it all tonight. But he's got to beat Steven Strasburg and the Nats, and they're tough. Dear Jim, lay off the Dolphins. We believe their coverage on that pass play was very effective. Signed, Flight Decks, extra small, winter headscarf. Portland woman's deodorant. And Bodie's $900,000 deductible insurance policy on his single wide trailer in Tornado Alley. Well, sincerely, Denlesks, covering all your email needs. I'm talking about a team that's up 14-3. It's the end of the first half, and they just go all out blitz. And they got a guy running free right through the secondary. And I'm not saying that the game was decided then, because Miami was not going to win that game no matter what. but the momentum certainly changed. And all of a sudden, a 14-3 game, instead of going to halftime 14-3, it's 14-10. And that was one of the worst defensive calls I've ever seen. And some of you try to say, hey, Rome, you know why that was such a bad defensive call? Because it wasn't a defensive call. They did that because they're not trying. To which I would say, oh, no, they were trying. They definitely were trying. They were playing hard. It was that bad of a defensive call. Like the worst I've ever seen.
I'm not going to second guess that one.
You're not, Coach? I will. I'll second guess that. I'll third guess that. Hell, I'll first guess that. The second that went down, who watching that? And again, I don't think you need to be Bill Belichick to know. Who watching that didn't think, are you, what? You're going to go with that kind of blitz. And you're going to drop three guys into coverage, total. And you're the Dolphins. And you're winless. And you're up 14-3. And you're on the road. And it's Monday night. And it's near the end of the half. For who? For what? Why? Because, dummy, they want to lose. No. They don't want to lose. They're not good enough to win. They're not talented enough to win, but they don't want to lose. They play hard for a bad team. They play hard for a bad team. Brian Flores, unlike Adam Gase, has not lost his locker room. Those guys still play hard. He hasn't lost the locker room. He just has a locker room of guys who don't play very well. And the reason they don't play very well is they're not very good. Wah, wah, wah. Hey, Jim, those women should keep their shirts on. Signed, fat, shirtless, man boob, Bears fans in freezing temps. Chris in Portland. He's not the guy who made the call about Portland woman, is he? Romy, I can't wait to see those ladies when they're 90 either. Regards, Ike. Geoff and Lincoln. Ike's just taking a pounding in the back row every single day. And what's he do? He just comes in here, eats his candy, works hard, keeps his mouth shut, and just takes a pounding every single day. He's not bothering anybody back there. I don't even know what he's doing back there, but I know he's not bothering anybody back there. Like Hawk. Hawk's bothering everybody. Ike's not bothering anybody at all. He just comes in, drinks his chocolate milk, eats his candy for breakfast, books the pod, does a good job booking the pod. Hey, Rome, don't make such a big deal about the timing of Flacco's injury. It's purely a coincidence. Signed, Tanya Harding. Why? Ken, in Louisiana, which coincidence are you talking about? That the timing of the injury, that the second that lead pipe bounced off her knee, she got hurt? Why? Or that she got hurt as she was getting ready for the Olympic trials? Which coincidence? Unbelievable. Don't tell me, of all the sports scandals, that there's any better than that. 1-800-636-8686. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche, fourth season as head coach. He led the Avalanche to the playoffs each of the last two seasons. Colorado was in first in the Central. They're at home against Florida tomorrow night. Jared Bednar is my guest. Jared, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jim.
Good. Good to have you. So you're coming off back-to-backs where you beat Vegas and then drop one to Anaheim. When you lose a game like that and then you've got a few days off, is that a good thing or would you rather get back out there as quickly as you can and get that taste out of your mouth?
It just depends on the situation. I think in this one, it was good to get a couple days off. We had gone on a long Eastern road trip and then snuck home for a day or two and then went to Vegas to finish that off with the back-to-back. I think our guys needed a little bit of rest and we're just starting to battle a few injuries too. So to get a mental break away from the rink for a couple days and get off the ice and get rested, I think it's a good thing for us.
All right, so you're 11 games into the season. Nathan MacKinnon has a point in every single game. Despite that really, really good start, he says he still has areas where he thinks he can improve. What do you make of the way he's shown up at the start of the season, and how do you think he's playing?
Well, he's playing good, yeah, and it's not surprising. I mean, if you see the way Nathan trains in the summertime and the condition he comes back to training camp in, it's not surprising that he's out to a hot start. I know that he expects a lot from himself, so you know, to be able to be on an 11-game point streak and still feel like you're not playing your best is pretty remarkable, and it just kind of shows you what a world-class athlete he is. And so, you know, these next few games with some of the injuries that we have are going to be real important, and he's certainly going to start carrying an even bigger load than he already has.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what makes him special? Is it that world-class talent, or is it something else, something more intangible?
I think it's both. Like, certainly his skating ability and his talent, they're exceptional. But I believe that the difference that kind of pushes him over the top is his drive and his competitiveness. I mean, this guy is a competitor in everything he does, and he wants to win so bad that he drives our team in that direction. And when you mix both of those, the talent and speed and then that drive, I think was what makes the elite guys super elite.
Jared Bednar is my guest. You know, part of the reason I want to talk to you is your journey to this point is so interesting. You came up, you played in the ECHL, the IHL, the AHL. So how would you describe yourself as a player?
I was a mucker and grinder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't have the talent, I guess, to be able to play in the NHL. So, and even in the American League and International League level, I was one of those borderline guys, like a character guy that just tried to do whatever I could to help the team win. And, you know, when you get in those situations, you have to really pay attention to all the, you know, what the coaches want as far as structure and the way you want to play, and you got to try and chip in any little way you can. So I think that's what's kind of helped steer me towards the coaching side of it. As I got a little further along in my career playing in the minors, I decided that was an avenue that I wanted to pursue. And so it's you know, very similar. I started in the ECHL as a coach and then went to the American League and spent a number of years in each league before I ended up getting the opportunity in Colorado. Now I'm just trying to make the most of it and try to lead our team to win some hockey games here and get into the playoffs and get a chance to go after that cup.
See, that's the thing. I mean, you were going to go all in. Once you decide to be a coach, you were going to go all in and you wanted to coach in the NHL and win a Stanley Cup, but that meant that you were going to have to move around quite a bit. Growing up, you were the son of a Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer, which meant that you moved around as a kid, and that's not something you necessarily wanted for your family. So family and friends were important to you. What was it like then when you and your wife decided the family would stay in South Carolina while you pursued coaching? How challenging a decision was that to make?
Well, that was a tough one. Yeah, that was a tough one. You know, like you said, growing up, I moved every, you know, 3 to 4 years. You're on the move a lot, and I think there's a lot of positives you take out of that. You get to, you know, meet new people and see new places, and we were lucky enough to get stationed at the same place a couple times and reconnect with friends. But when I sort of settled in Charleston, South Carolina, I was playing for the Stingrays and coaching for the Stingrays hockey team there. What happens is that you see your kids kind of get dug in their sports, and you don't want to move them around. Plus, I didn't know how long I was going to be in these different cities because my contracts weren't really long-term. So we decided to sort of, you know, me to go on and pursue that and come back in the summer. And my wife and kids came out every chance they could, and I went home whenever I could in breaks in the season. But it's tough, you know, missing your kids grow up and seeing their events and the sports and everything that they do on a nightly basis. But, you know, there was a lot of Skype and phone calls, and it's worked out, you know. To be able to get to the NHL and now have them here with me, I think, is very special, and I'm trying to get them to enjoy it as much as I am.
That's the best. Colorado was in first in the Central. He led the Avalanche to the playoffs each of the last two seasons. Fourth year as a head coach, and he just closed the show. Jared Bednar is my guest. Jared, we start the segment a little bit later than we normally do, so what do you say we get you back on soon? We can finish that up. Great to have you. Thank you so much. Jared Bednar of the Avalanche. Huge call today brought to you by Dove Men Plus Care. Hey guys, how many of you have been using your wife or your girlfriend shampoo? Your hair is different, so do them and your hair a favor. Get your own. Dove Men Plus Care has created a range designed to give your hair the care it needs to stay strong and more resilient. It is available at